fellows and girls to listen very carefully tonight. I'd like for you not to be coloring or writing where the house is preaching tonight, because I have some things I really think you ought to hear. I want all of the high school students to pay very rapt attention tonight. I'm not going to scold you, but I am going to explain something to you that I think you ought to know. I want all the Hiles Anderson College students to listen very, very carefully. Anybody who's in school of any kind, or anybody who has not yet grown up and left home to go out on your own, I want you to listen very carefully. I want to speak on the subject tonight. You've got to wait to be free. You've got to wait to be free. The psalmist said in our scripture a while ago, "And the vineyard which thy right hand hath planted, and the branch that thou madest strong for or by thyself." The branch that thou madest strong. Now, how do you make a branch strong? When you have a little tree, you tie a straight post, or post to it maybe, or tie it to a post. Or you may build a little fence, a small fence around it, so it has to grow within the circumference of that fence, or the circle of that fence. And you keep it there until the tree is able to grow on its own. And that's what it means here when it says that thou didst make the branch strong for thyself or by thyself. Our Heavenly Father, thou hast brought us again into this place, and I pray tonight that you'd give us a truth that will encourage us, inspire us, instruct us, and enthuse us. In Jesus' name, amen. In the 1940s and in the 1950s, a doctrine was presented, headed by the misguided Dr. Spock, that said that you should not retard the progress of a child, nor should you thwart his progress by denying him of anything. If he wants to cry, let him cry. If he wants something, let him have it. Do not impede his progress by spanking and so forth. I heard about a fella who had a child like that back in those days. The little child began to cry, and the dad said, "What is it, son?" And he said, "I want a worm." And the dad, not desiring to impede the progress of his child, got a worm for his child. Whereupon the child began to cry again. And the father insisted that the child tell him why he was crying now. And the child said, "I want the worm cut in half." And so the dad cut the worm in half, as the child said. And then the child began to cry again. And the dad said, "What do you want now, son?" He said, "I want you to eat half of it, daddy." And so the daddy, being an advocate of Dr. Spock, not wanting to deny the child of his natural progress, ate half of the worm. And the child began to cry again. And the daddy said, "Why did you cry?" And the child said, "You ate my half." And this is the kind of thing that we read in our books and our newspapers, and our pseudo child psychologists advanced to us these truths, although they thought were truths. And so, in the 40s and 50s, this doctrine was spread across this country. A few of us old hell-raising fundamental preachers tried to put down that thing, but we had little success at it. And in the 1960s, there arose a clamor from these unrestrained babies for freedom. They no longer, in the 60s, were little children wanting to strike a match and burn a match, but they're wanting to light a fire to a building and burn down a building. And these young people that were unrestrained in their childhood began to clamor for their freedom. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say something if a hair lips every dog in this county. And that's this. No child has a right for freedom. No child has a right for freedom. As a result of these doctrines, Dr. Spock and others, we had what we called the year of the child. Then we had what we called the child advocates, and then we even had children suing their parents. And these young people said, we have a right to our freedom, and we want our freedom. Now, as I said, a child has no right to freedom. No, God did not make freedom for a child. You see, God has put a child in what we call a home so that the parents may put external restraints on him until he is able to do right by inward self-control that he has been doing because of external restraint. Now, let me say that again in simpler words so Stan can understand it. Though I do appreciate the way he says amen, whether he understands it or not. But the honest truth is that what God does is God takes a child, he puts that child in a home. Now, he says to moms and dads, you restrain that child from doing what he shouldn't do. And you keep on restraining that child until that child has enough self-control to where he himself will choose not to do what he shouldn't do. And until the child is old enough and that child has learned to do right because of an inward self-control, he's supposed to be keep doing right because of external restraint. I can recall when Dave was a boy, he'd said, Dad, I said, son, do something. And he'd said, Dad, why do I have to do it? And I'd say, never mind, just do it. I'll tell you when you grow up. Don't have to be any why. Mom and Dad says, do it. That's enough. That's enough. And because moms and dads are supposed to exercise external restraint. Now, how long should that external restraint be exercised? Until the child is able to choose to do right for himself. Illustration. When I was a boy, my mother had some aspirins. I do not know whether it was in a bottle or in a little can. Or what do you call these things? Tin of aspirin. I don't know. I do know. There were 12 of them. I do know that mother thought that I could not get to them. I do know that I got to them, and I do know that I took 12 aspirins at one time. And, I was just a little pack, a year and a half, but I can still remember my mother being frantic. Now, I can remember when I was a year and a half old. Yes, I can. Now, I can't recall when I was 55 what I did, but I can recall what I did when I was a year and a half. But, they rushed me to a doctor. I don't know whether he blew my stomach out or what, but I'll guarantee you one thing. It was a real active place around there for some time. Now, why? What am I saying? I'm saying that a child is not free. Because if the average child were free, when he's a little bitty child, he'd get all the aspirins. He'd eat all the aspirins. And I'm supposed to be, or a child is supposed to be, by external restraint, kept from the aspirins until the child, because of inward self-control, keeps himself from the aspirins. That's why a child, you don't let a child play with fire. You give a child freedom, he'll burn himself to death. But we restrain him from the fire until he has inner self-control enough to where he will not go into the fire or play with the fire. You have a pair of scissors around the house, or you have a knife, and you say to the child, son or daughter, this is a knife. And this knife is dangerous, so you cannot touch that knife. And that's why when our children got up to be able to walk, I took them on a guided tour of the house. And we went to everything they weren't supposed to touch, and I would say, no, 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 no. And so if they decided to touch it, I made it somewhat uncomfortable for them in direct response to their touching that thing that they shouldn't touch. Now, here's the danger. The danger is that a mother or a father will be selfish about some things and not want a child to touch anything in the house. I still believe that the house is for the child and not the child for the house. I'm more concerned about rearing good children than I am keeping a clean house, though I do believe in clean houses. I'm saying that the mother says, or the father says, now you can't play with that knife. If you play with that knife, I'm going to what? I'm going to spank you. Now, what's a spanking? It is an external restraint. Before I get through, I'll cut myself with this stupid knife. You wait and see. Because I have not yet learned to keep from it by inward self-control. That's why a child doesn't play with the scissors. That's why a child has to be told what to eat. When Becky was a baby, a little child,
I found her out in the flower bed eating. No, not the flowers, the dirt that the flowers were made in. Now, she was eating dirt. Now, you say, well, she's free. I'm free. No, you're not free. No, you're not. You're not free. And you have no right to be free until you become an adult and until you get to the place in your life to where by inner self-control, you will do that which you could not do as you were growing up because of self-restraint. And so as when our kids grew up, we didn't move the vase off the coffee table. The kids took care of that for us later on. But we didn't do that. I just said, no. And the time, we went through about 10 vases. But anyway, no, we didn't do that. The honest truth is the children were taught by external restraint. Don't do it. Don't do it. You've heard me tell about David. By the way, Dave called this afternoon. They had over 1,900 in Sunday school this morning. Had a big day. Had over 135 folks saved. And they baptized this year 705 people. That means that during this year, they baptized more people than they did any year in the history of the church. And I'm a part of the history of that church. The record was 704 baptisms, and so the young man's gone too far, and I'm not going to pray for him anymore. It's my prayers that caused it. And so, no longer. But anyway, you heard me tell. When Dave was a boy, he was sitting at the table, and I said, son, eat your green beans. And he said, no. Now, no was not a good word to say to Dad. And so I took him in his room, and I said, now, son, this hurts me worse than it does you. And I said, but God has told me to spank you when you disobey. And I spanked him, and we prayed, and we cried. He cried, and I cried. He cried more than I cried. And so back to the table. And I said, now, son, eat your green beans. And he said, no. And so we went back to the bedroom again, and we had a little talk again. And I said, son, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you, because you can't say no to Dad. And so I spanked him. And at the place that God has prepared where no bones can get broken easily, and I spanked him. And so we went back to the table after we had prayed and after we had cried together, and I talked a little bit. And we went back to the table. And I said, now, son, eat your green beans. And he said, no. And, of course, as you can see, he has tendencies already of being a child. And took him back to the bedroom. And I said, son, this doesn't hurt me now more than it's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt you more than it hurts me, because I was already immune to being hurt. And I let him have it again. And, you know, we sat there 2 hours. I put the green beans in his mouth. He spit them up. I put them in his mouth again. He spit them up. I put them in his mouth again. He spit them up. I put them in, and we sat there 2 hours. And I'll be honest with you, if he hadn't eaten his green beans, we'd still be sitting there tonight. We would still be sitting there. And I'd say, eat your green beans. So David tells the story when he preaches around the country. He says, when I got through with him after 2 hours, he said he went up and down the street knocking on doors, asking anybody who had any green beans they wanted eaten. And now, what was I doing? I was preventing him by external restraint from doing that which he should not do, and aiding him by external incentives to do that which he ought to do. Now then, Dave is grown. His favorite food would be green beans. No doubt about it. He loves green beans. Nobody has to tell Dave to eat his green beans. Now, that's what the home is for. The home is not a place to keep kids fed and happy and pampered until they get 18 so they can go out and live like the devil. No, a home is a place to say, don't do that because it's bad, and you can't do it, you're going to get it. And if you do it, you're going to get it, and you're not going to do it. And I'm going to say you don't do it, and I'm going to say you don't do it, and I'm going to say you don't do it. And then when the day comes and the child says, okay, I won't do it myself now because I have inner self-control, then the child has earned his right to be free. You don't have a right when you're a child to play with scissors and play with knives and play with dangerous things. You have a right to that. You don't. And children are supposed to be trained until they have inner self-control. Now, the same thing is true with things more deadly than scissors, with things more deadly than knives, with things more deadly than dirt, with things more deadly than aspirins. Listen, we're awful concerned these days about putting cyanide in Tylenol. And we ought to be concerned. We're awfully concerned today about putting razor blades in candy bars. Why doesn't somebody get concerned about putting alcohol in beverages? Why, my soul, there are more people be killed tonight by many, many times more be killed tonight by some wild driver who's been drinking alcohol, and little boys and girls become easy prey to their dangerous treks down busy highways and freeways and city streets, and yet we're not concerned about that. Now, I'm saying that these things, for example, that's why, young people, we have laws against your taking dope. You see, I don't care if you're 6 or 16 or 60, you haven't got enough sense to leave dope alone. We pass rules then where you can't take it. And then when you get old enough and smart enough and intelligent enough and have enough sense where you won't take it because of inner self-control, we can lift the restrictions then. But same thing's true about tobacco. You say, why can't we smoke at Hammond Baptist High School and Howells Anderson College? Well, in the first place, you can't smoke because we said you can't smoke, and that's the reason. But in case you want a little philosophy behind it, it's because we are going to keep you from smoking by external restraint until you have enough internal character and self-will and self-control to keep poison and dope out of your lips. And then you have a right to be free. But you don't have a right to be free until you learn not to play with scissors. You don't have a right to be free until you learn not to play with knives. You don't have a right to be free until you've learned not to eat dirt. You don't have a right to be free until you've learned that you're supposed not to do bad and to do right. That's why we don't allow you to drink liquor. That's why we have restraints about it. That's why we have restraints about holding hands in our schools. And that's why if you parents had any sense at all, you'd cooperate with me and with us on this matter about the children's behavior with the opposite sex. If you had any sense at all. But some of you go, you're mad. Like, I trust my daughter. I trust my daughter. I trust my daughter. I trust my son. I trust my son. Body one parent. Body one cracker. Body one cracker. Body one cracker. I trust my son. That's the silliest thing I ever heard of in my life. Honest, simple truth is, listen. I want to say this tonight. Like it or not. Fire me or not. I'm going to say it. Listen. Somebody said the other day that the reason Brother Hiles preaches like he does about young folks shouldn't date in cars alone, and you shouldn't hold hands, and you shouldn't kiss till you get married. And I want to say it again. You should not let your lips touch a member of the opposite sex till the preacher says, I now pronounce you husband and wife. And somebody said the other day, oh, Brother Hiles, this way done. He preaches that because he wants us to be here, so he goes over here and preaches his picture, so we'll get at least here. No, sir, Brother Hiles preaches because he thinks you ought to be over here. And the rules of Hiles Anderson College ought to be enforced in every home in this church. And it's a pretty sad commentary when we care more about the purity of the girls in our college who come here to live from somewhere else than you do about your own daughter that bears your name. You say, I just don't agree. You don't have to agree, but you're going to have to listen as long as this voice holds out. You're going to have to listen to this preacher tell you that we had better say to our kids, you can't hold hands, and you can't neck and pet, and you can't go in cars alone until you're able and old enough to be an adult, and you get married, and then, bless God, Stan, you don't have to restrain yourself then. Now, look at their plane. Brother Hiles doesn't preach stronger than he believes. Brother Hiles preaches all he believes. And when I say you shouldn't kiss to get married, I mean you shouldn't kiss to get married. You call me the Neanderthal man, pilt-out man, out of date, old-fashioned, call me what you want to call me. But I won't tell you something tonight. You go right ahead. But if you knew what I knew, you'd believe what I believe. You really would. I'm saying that it's time that parents in this church, I'm talking about Sunday school teachers. I'm talking about choir members. I'm talking about deacons. I'm saying it's time that we decided to put some restraint on our kids. And unless you do, you're not you're gonna answer to God Almighty for not putting that external restraint on your children until they have enough internal character to do on their own volition that which is right and not do that which is wrong. This is the purpose of the home. To provide this external restraint. This is the purpose of the school. To provide this external restraint. And by the way, kids, we're not trying to keep you from having fun. We're trying to see to it you have fun the whole way through. That's what the jail is all about. If we find a member of society who cannot, because of internal self-control, do those things that are right to do, then we have to incarcerate him. Notice that big word. Incarcerate him. And if worse comes to worse, we have to put him in jail too. But we incarcerate him. And what do? We restrain him externally. Why? Because he did not have self-control from within to restrain himself. And so if he does not restrain himself from within, then we restrain him from without. That's what the school's for. That's what the home's for. That's what the jail's for. That's what the police are for. That's what the laws are for. That we may restrain externally. You know, the old-fashioned Chinese home. A girl of 12 or older was not allowed outside the house until she got married. And the Japanese girl at marriage never had even touched a man's hand, even her own brother's hand. Now, I'm not suggesting that we keep the girls locked in the house after they pass the age of 12. But I'll tell you what, between that and where some of you parents are is a pretty good ground somewhere. I'm saying that if we don't get back to discipline in the home, this country's gone. I mean, our trouble's not Tylenol. Our trouble's not putting razor blades in candy. Our trouble's not putting poison in mouthwash. Our trouble is a bunch of parents who too busy at night clubbing and country clubbing and hobnobbing and bowling, leaguing, and until we're not at home, we're not rearing children anymore. And the truth is, our children, we're not restrained. I'm not talking about locking a child in the basement. I'm talking about teaching a child what's right and what's wrong, and one day he'll rise and call you blessed for it. This is what God is saying here. God is saying, you keep that tree inside the iron cage for support. And if it gets its release, by the way, you take that tree inside this little iron cage or untie it from that pole that holds it straight, and you give it its release, and the only freedom it gets is to fall over when the wind blows. That's the only freedom it has. God said that you make a tree strong for our sake. How do you do it? You put that little... Anybody's ever planted a little tree, you know what I'm talking about. We used to have one in our yard, and you've had one in yours, a little old sprig of a tree, and you put it there, and you put a straight post to it, or you may even build a little fence around it. How long do you keep the fence there? Until the tree can grow by itself. Until the roots are deep enough. Until the tree can do without the cage what the cage made it do. Until the tree can do without the pole what the pole made it do. And young people, don't rebel at rules. Don't rebel at laws. Don't want your freedom. The truth is, if the average young person gets his freedom, he'll ruin his life. Somebody said, well, you give old Hiles a while, and he gets older, he'll mellow. Now, the word mellow means fully ripe and nearly rotten. That's why somebody said I have a mellow voice. But I'm saying, he'll mellow and he'll change his convictions. Has anybody here seen any hint of this in the last 23 and a half years? Huh? Anybody here seen the mellowing process yet? No, sir. You see, what was wrong 23 years ago is still wrong tonight. And what was black 23 years ago is still black tonight. And what was white 23 years ago is still white tonight. And listen, unless we get our children and we say we are not going to let you do that which is wrong, we'll build a little cage around you while you're a little branch or a little twig, and we'll put a post beside you, and by external restraint, we'll keep you from doing that which will wreck your life. And how long we do it? We'll do it until you, because of internal character, will do it on your own. And I'll guarantee you this, I'll guarantee you every child in this room who shrinks tonight, every Hiles Anderson College student tonight who shrinks back, and every Hammond Baptist High School student who shrinks back and says, I don't like it. I'll guarantee you the day is going to come when you'll rise up and call us blessed because we kept that little fence around you while you're growing and because we kept that. Listen, do you know who these old people are who are rotting in these rest homes tonight? You know who they are? They are parents who did not restrain their children externally while these parents were rearing their families. And the truth is, their children could care less about moms and dads. Why? Because they weren't taught character. And the same character that says you can't touch this, you can't do this, it's against the rules, and you'll be punished if you do, that same character is the same, comes from the same source that doesn't let mom and dad go without when they get old. Moms and dads, the most loved moms and dads in this room tonight are the ones that were the most hated years ago. And the most hated moms and dads in this room tonight who have grown children are the ones who are the most loved years ago. Young people, you don't have a right just to go where you want to go when you want to go. No, you don't. As long as you live at home, you don't have a right just to flit here and there and go where you want. You have no right for that. That's what God is saying here. God is saying, a tree inside an iron cage for support, if it gets its release, the only freedom it gets is to fall over it. And I'll tell you something, young people, if we tonight relaxed every rule and every standard, I'll guarantee you what freedom you'd have. You'd have freedom to fall. You'd have freedom to fall in sin. You'd have freedom to fall into shame. You'd have freedom to fall into heartbreak. You'd have freedom to fall into ruin. You've got one of these moms in debt. They may be a little bit cranky, a little bit mean. They might be a little hard to get along with. But you've got one of these old-fashioned moms and dads who say you can't do this because it's not good for you. And they keep that little cage around you while you're growing up and keep you tied to that straight and narrow pole while you're growing up. You jump up and down and say, hallelujah, my mama loves me and my daddy loves me. I'll never forget that football player I've told you about. Came to my office on Sunday night, a morning after church. And I said, son, what is it? That football player looked down on me and he said, pastor or preacher, he said, would you do something for me? And I said, what is it, son? He said, would you spank me? I looked up at him and realized that the chore before me was more than I was capable of doing. And I said, son, why do you want me to spank you? And he said, with tears rolling down his cheeks, he said, nobody has ever loved me enough to spank me. He said, spank me. And I want to tell you something. Young people, you get tired of hearing it? You're going to get tired of this because it's going to keep on coming. But young people, the truth is, you do not have a right to be free until you are able to choose that which will not destroy you because of your own inner self-will and self-control. I preached one Sunday night along this line, and I used a cast as an illustration. Here's a fellow who breaks a leg. Now, there's nothing quite as bad as seeing a broken arm or a broken leg. I mean, boy, when all of a sudden that arm is supposed to bend that way, bends that way. It's an unsightly thing. So what happened? Here's an arm. It's broken. And so what do we do? We put that arm like it ought to be. Just like it ought to be. And then we put a cast around that arm. Now that cast stays around that arm until the arm will grow right on its own. Person breaks his leg. Tony Hiles, one of our football players, had his leg broken in down Ohio, Middletown, Ohio, tonight. And Tony, I'm sure, has a cast on that leg. Now, listen, without a cast on that leg, man, that thing, I may never get back down again. That thing may shoot out that way. What happens? Put a cast on that leg. And you cannot move that leg outside that cast. Why? Because the leg's not going to grow like it ought to grow without the cast. I've told you this. That finger right there, that little finger right there, is a perfect example. I broke that finger at a 4th of July or Labor Day one picnic we had years ago. I was playing shortstop. The church was playing a little softball game, and I was playing shortstop, and I was young then, and I wanted to prove to the church that I was the next Pee Wee Reese and Phil Rizzuto. And so, I ran out in the outfield, a little pop fly, ran out to get it. I made a big dive for it, hit my finger, and that's as close as I can get that finger to that. Now, if I bend my hand, I can, but straighten it out. That's all it'll do. You straighten it out. Now, that one out there, it's fine. But that one out there, that's all it'll do. Now, what happened? That finger went its own way. It should have been in a cast, but I didn't do it. So I had no external restraint to bring that finger where it ought to be, and the finger went its own way. Now, a cast on a broken leg, or a broken finger, or a broken arm, a cast is there to keep the leg going the direction it ought to go, or keep the arm going the direction it ought to go. Until the arm will do it on its own, or the leg will do it on its own. And it's time some moms and dads in this church put some cast on your kids. I love you. I'm not mad at you. I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to keep you from having a broken heart. It's time you put some cast on your kids. You know, the first warriors for democracy thought they could be free if they could just slay the tyrant. And yet they soon found that they weren't ready yet to be free. So they slew Louis the 16th, and they got Robespierre in his place. They shot the Tsar and got Lenin and Trotsky in the place of the Tsar. You see, real democracy cannot be won until people are prepared and ready to operate a real democracy. That's what God is saying. God is saying, that little branch that shoots up, that little branch that shoots up, keep it tied to something straight. Keep it tied to something straight. Keep it tied to something straight. And then, when that branch gets to place where it'll grow, where it will grow, a southern rearing is coming out, where it will grow straight on its own. Then, remove the cage, or remove the rod, the stick, and let it grow. Illustration. I guess of all my growing up days, Brother John, I guess the thing that was the worst to me was Sunday. I hated Sunday as a boy. You know why? Because we couldn't do anything fun on Sunday. You know, I started dreading Sunday on Monday. And Sunday cast a reflection, a shadow, the shade of Sunday stretched all over the week. And by the time it got to Friday, that shade was like midnight. But Mama said, son, you're not going to play any ball on Sunday. I couldn't understand why everybody else in the neighborhood could play ball on Sunday but me. And I had to sit in the house and look out the window and watch the other guys play ball on Sunday. And Mama said, son, this is the Lord's day. Well, I thought if it's the Lord's day, let him do what he wants to do on it. I'll let you on. Now, I don't believe in any Sabbath. They're all nailed to the cross. And I think my mama's doctrine was a little wrong. But I sure did. I'm sure glad it's that way. Because Mama, she kept me from doing anything. But Mama, she didn't believe in doing anything that's fun on Sunday. Nothing. Nothing. You couldn't kick a football. You couldn't throw a baseball. You couldn't. I couldn't even shoot marbles. I'd go outside the house, draw me a circle, and start shooting marbles. And I'd say, Mama, I'm not ooching. I'm not fudging. But to make a difference, I couldn't shoot marbles. And you know what? The day came when that thing took. It took. And to this day, I couldn't pitch a ball on Sunday. No way. Now, I don't think it's a sin to do it, but I couldn't do it. If you want to pitch one, I'll watch you, but I couldn't do it. And you know what? I couldn't eat in a restaurant on Sunday. No way. Now, I may sit outside a restaurant for an hour from 11 to 12 and eat at 12:01 on Monday morning, but not on Sunday. You say, that sounds like legalism. I know it's legalism. It's not legalism, but I know it's too strict. But Mama, she kept the tree. And she said, this is a rule. And the tree grows straight. Until, the truth is, now by reflex, I do what I had to do when I was a boy. I had a paper route when I was 10 years old. Alice Morning Noon route. That's back in the days when you got your morning paper before noon. I had to have all my papers delivered by 4 o'clock or I got fired. By 5 o'clock. 3 o'clock in the morning, I got up. And went up, got my papers, folded my papers, and put them in my paper bag, put the bag across the handlebars of the bicycle, and took off down to Denver Drive. I'd drive down the street, tossing those papers. We folded the papers like this. We'd fold it once like that, and then we'd fold it like this. Papers weren't as big as they are now. You'd fold it like that, and then you'd put it in like that, and you'd fold this flap down like that, and then you'd put it inside your paper bag on the handlebars of your bicycle, and throw the papers like that, you see. But, you know what? I was 10 years old. And did you know, boy, I couldn't wait till I got my first week's pay. I made $3. And my mama, I got home, I said, boy, oh boy, I'll probably buy me a car and a house and a suit and a pair of shoes. And I got home, and mama said, hold it, son. I said, hold it what? She said, hold it. She said, first, I want to take 30 cents of this. That belongs to God. She said, that's God. The first thought I had is I didn't see God out to throw no papers. But mama said, that belongs to God. And by the way, every dollar I've made from that day to this, God's gotten a dime of it. And I'd be ashamed of myself if I robbed my God of that which is His. But anyway, then I said, well, that's okay. I got $2.70. Spend like I want to spend it. But you know, I couldn't spend it like I want to spend it. Did you know until I was 16 years old, I couldn't spend anything without checking with Mama and getting it cleared through headquarters? You say, what are you saying? Your money? I kept telling her that. I was like the guy captured prisoner, you know, and called the headquarters and said, a captured prisoner. I said, good, bring him in. He said, he won't come. I said, come back yourself. He said, he won't let me. And I was that way. I mean, my money, Mama, didn't make any difference. Listen to me. No child has a right to spend money like he wants to spend it. None. Well, you say, I made it myself. I know. Listen, if you take that money you make yourself, I don't care how hard you work for it. If you take it, you will set yourself before you're grown some spending habits and some spendthrift habits that will lead you to develop a certain disregard for the sanctity of money and for being frugal and saving, that'll ruin you someday. And no child has a right to take his money and spend it on himself. Mom and Daddy ought to approve every purchase that child makes. You say, you sure are out of date. Yeah, I tell you how out of date I am. I'm so out of date, we didn't even have to worry about getting cyanide in Tylenol when I was a boy. And if moms and dads had reared their children like I'm preaching tonight, we wouldn't have all these frets and worries and concerns. But you say, well, how's I feel so sorry for my child? All the other kids in the public schools and the kids in our neighborhood, they get to spend their money the way they want to. Yeah, and your child will go to hell with them too one of these days. I don't like your preaching. I almost like your living either. Illustration. You see that thing right there? See that? That thing right there has caused me more heartache than any other piece of material in the world. I've never understood why anybody invented those things. Never have. This trouble I have in my throat would never have come. My mama said, son, we're going to church. Get on your shirt and your tie. And I did. Now, I couldn't understand what, to me, the best thing for a kite was, for a tie was the tail of a kite. I know. But mama said, put on your shirt and tie. And I did. I didn't want to, but I did. I want to say something. You're not doing your boy a favor when you let him come to church out of town. You're not. Well, you say, Brother Hound, I tell you what, I'm just tired of you being strict and trying to tell me how to run my family. I'm not trying to tell you how to run your family. I'm trying to say this, that your boy, listen, your boy ought to be taught to come to church in a tie. So I did. I did. Now, when did I get my freedom to choose whether or not to wear a tie? When I had got enough sense on my own to wear a tie. He said, show me in the Bible where it says you should wear a tie to church. I can't do that. But since when did you get interested in the Bible? I'll tell you what I'll do. You give me 100 kids, you take 100. I'll make those 100 kids wear ties to church. You let yours wear what they want to wear. And there are enough other things that will accompany that of the same type thing. I'll guarantee you, I'll double your kids in those that turn out good. I'll guarantee you. Mama said, son, you get in by 11. By 11. Get in by 11. I got in by 11. It's a tragedy. Listen, we got far too many kids in this church, and I'm talking about college kids and high school kids alike. We got far too many kids in this church that are on their own, just running around where they want to run around at 11:30 and 12 o'clock at night. Far too many of them. Far too many of them. I mean, 11 o'clock at night, unless you have definite permission from mom and dad, you ought to be home washing your feet and going to bed. I just don't believe that. I know, and the very reason you bristle like that proves my point. It proves my point. Oh, my God in heaven, what's wrong with us? Letting our children grow up, no cage around them, no cast on their little arms. They're not growing right yet. No straight rod by which the tree must be tied till it's able to go on its own. Now, I want to say this again. There you say. Yeah. You grew up in another generation. Yes, I grew up in a generation where you could walk down the street at night without having to be afraid of being attacked. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's bound to be a reason why that generation was like that. And I'll tell you why it was like that. Because, listen, 99% of all the homes, I'm talking about Baptist, I'm talking about Methodist, I'm talking about Presbyterian, I'm talking about Catholic, I'm talking about unsaved people. 99% of the homes, they had restraints on their children. I guess the reason I thought tonight of the man who started all this mess, because it's Halloween, I just happened to think of Dr. Spook. There's too much hanging around going on. At pizza parlors. Just hanging around. If you're going to go to pizza parlor, you go where you can get out in time to get home by 11. Go there and eat your pizza. And when you get through eating your pizza, get out! Hanging around will cause any kid to get in trouble. Any kid. Hanging around. There's too much hanging around. Far too much of it. You old timers heard me tell this years ago. Becky is our oldest child. She and Tim had the end 11. By the way, more than one time I've broken up a party. Yeah. More than one time I've gone 11, about 11:10 to the party, walked in, said, I won't mind to come. On. Home. You said, Brother Hiles, how mean? No. Brother Pussyfooter, how mean? Yeah. Yeah. Sure. 11 o'clock. Becky and Tim talked about their wedding. Sat in my office one night, planned their wedding. And I said, Tim, what time do you want the wedding? And Tim said, 7 o'clock. And Becky instinctively and seriously turned over and said, Tim, you know if we get married at 7, we couldn't get home by 11. Boy, I love that. I love that. And their moms and dads in this room tonight who are reaping heartache because you didn't keep that little tree within that cage. You know why? Because you want your kids to love you now. Did you know God didn't intend for you to be the buddy of your children? Bible doesn't say, buddies, rear your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Bible doesn't say, obey your buddies. Far too many parents are in popularity contests trying to win the popularity of their children. Listen, you know, we've outgone the seat on this ball game business, anyhow. Now, I'm not against taking your kid to a ball game. But that's not... Nowadays, a kid, here's a guy. The guy pulled the electric chair switch. He says, you have a last word? And this criminal killed 75 people. Put Tylenol and cyanide and Tylenol and buried kids under his house. Killed a bunch of nurses. All that. He's there. He says, it's not my fault. Not my fault. What do you have to say? It's my daddy's fault. He didn't take me to see the Cubs. Listen, buddy, seeing the Cubs don't help anybody turn out right. My Bible said every man is going to give an account of himself to God, and a lot of parents in this room ought to get out of the popularity contest with your kids. Sure love them! And sure want them to love you, but not at the expense of letting them stay out till they want to come in. Man, one night, I thought my mother was going to kill my sister. I was pulling for her. I thought mother, you know what my sister did? Hey, let me tell you the crime she committed that almost caused my mother to put her on the gallows. I mean, it was all night, early. It was all night lectures you got. I never got any because I didn't deserve any, but you got a lot of them. But, listen, you know what my sister did? Are you ready? I hate to bring this up. Earlene, I'm sorry. I apologize. I hate to dig up things out of the past and skeletons out of your closet, but I got to do it. You know what she did? You ready? I've forgotten. She called, hear me, she called a boy on the telephone. And no wonder she got it. Okay, call me what you want to call me, but you give me a young lady that still won't call a boy on the telephone. My mother said, you don't call young ladies, don't call boys. Young ladies ought not to call boys on the telephone. He said, what's wrong? Doesn't have to be anything wrong with it. I said it. It's not ladylike. Well, you say, I don't see it. Okay. You take 100 young ladies that do, and I'll take 100 young ladies that don't, and the same type thing that you let them do, I won't let them do. Listen, you know, the only time my mother came closer to killing Earlene than that was this. One night, a boy just dropped by the house. Just dropped by. Now, young man, that is in very poor taste. I'm not sure anybody does it anymore, but they just drop by the house, unannounced. The truth is, if you're going to talk to the young lady or be with her, you owe her the respect to make an appointment to see her or a date to be with her. You know the only time mother came closer to killing it, leaning then? Now, I came closer a heap of times. But, you know what? One night, Earlene is going with a fellow named Herman. Now, what's wrong with that? And Herman came and pulled up in front of the house and honked. And Earlene ran out and got in the car and drove off. And my mama thought about pressing charges. And Earlene wished that's all she'd done.
And Mama was right. Mama was right. The boy's not a gentleman enough to get out of the car, come up, and knock on the door, and talk to Mom, and talk to Dad, and be a gentleman. Then don't you go with that dirty rascal. You say, boy, I tell you, the strictest fellow I ever saw preach. If I... I'm like a little kid in Sunday school. And he came home. And heathen dad said, son, what'd you learn? Why, he said, I learned about a guy named Moses. He said he led 3 million Jews and they came to a big wide sea. And Moses got a demolition crew and they got some sticks of dynamite and they dynamited that sea. And finally they poured some deep foundation for a bridge. And then they built a big bridge over that sea. And 3 million folks went over that bridge. And then they got some dynamite and put that dynamite under that bridge. And when the Egyptians came and they got on top of that bridge, they boom! And they blowed that thing to the sky. And all those Egyptians fell in that sea and killed. And that dad said, wow, is that really what they taught you? I said, no, sir. But if I told you what they really taught me, you really wouldn't believe it. Because that's old-fashioned. Yeah, we turned out some pretty decent folks back in those days, too. Yeah. We didn't have to sit in church on a Halloween night praying all the way through and not listen to the preacher. Praying our house would be in one piece when we got home. That's back in the days. And you say what you want to say. Call me what you want to call me. But a young man's going to take a young lady out. He ought to call her on the phone. He ought to ask her for a date. He ought to set the time. He ought to arrive there on time. He ought to walk up to the house and knock on the door. He ought to be a gentleman to Mom and Dad. The young lady ought to come and he ought to go out and have somebody else approved by both sets of parents in the car. And if she calls him on the telephone, he should date somebody else. Some of you kids right now are saying, boy, oh boy. Yeah, and that scowl proves my point, buddy. That proves my point. You sitting there, yeah, boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Yeah, and you're the kind we turn out. We don't put some restriction. And that very spirit you've got right now. Listen, every teenager in this house, every teenager in this house ought to be saying right now, if my preacher thinks it's a good idea for a girl not to call a boy, I won't call a boy. Every teenager in this house ought to say, every young man, if you are a young man, you ought to say, if my preacher thinks it's a good idea for me to make a date before I go see a girl, if my preacher thinks it's a good idea for me to get out of the car, go up and knock on the door and meet her mom or dad and be a gentleman, that's what I'll do. Brother, being a gentleman is not out of date. And propriety is not out of date. And manners are not out of... And every young man in this house tonight ought to say, if my preacher thinks I ought to wear a tie to church, I'll wear a tie to church. Now, if you don't wear a tie to church, you're as welcome as if you did wear a tie. But there's something about old-fashioned rules and discipline and propriety and manners this nation needs. That's why I intended tonight not to preach so long, but I have completely gone against my intentions, and I'm glad I did. Listen, that's why in the White House, they walk in the White House, and Mr. Carter was president. And a big old athlete walk in there, big old goon with a turtleneck sweater on, and a pair of blue jeans and a pair of sandals. I'm not going to go through all the ritual you got to do to talk to the Pope. But I want to tell you something tonight. I've got more respect for that than Mr. Carter's blue jean wearing hippie coming to the White House. You know what we ought to teach in our schools? We ought to teach manners 131. Propriety 132. Decency, 231. We're raising a bunch of little fundamental hoods. Pizza cowboys. Pizza Hut cowgirls. Just hanging around. Just hanging around. Now, some of you kids will go home tonight and you say, I just don't see that. Boy, you're perfect proof of what I'm talking about. Boy, God give us some children and young people in this church that say, boy, I honestly believe that preacher has me and has my good at heart. And by the way, he does. I'm not trying to make you subscribe to some rules in life that because they're my rules. I'm trying to make you subscribe to some rules that'll make you a gentleman or a lady. Your idea. Some big goon driving up in a car. Beep, 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 beep. And out she runs to the car. No propriety. No manners. No dignity. Well, I still like it the way it used to be. And it'd be that way now. If moms and dads have quit running for office with their kids. There are moms and dads in this room tonight. We're in popularity contest with each other. Trying to get your kid to like you best. I wish my mama could have you for about a year. Just about a year. You know, hey, let me tell you something. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'll think of it. Do you know, brethren, we're about the place in this country to where a mother, now hear me carefully, we're about the place in this country to where the kid, the Christian kid, are turning out better with one parent than two. And do you know why? I know young people in this church whose mothers are rearing them alone. You know why? Because that little mother knows she's doing it by herself. And she knows if it's done, she's got to do it. And in many cases, we're turning out better kids in families like that than in two-parent families where there's a contest to see who can become the best buddy of the kids. Boy, I like the old dad. Said to his kid, hey! The winds, louder. The winds and the PA men obey my will. The old dad's up there, not quite that much. Son, go get the paper. Hey, did you hear me? Go get the paper. Unfold it. Take the sport page out. I'm going to close as soon as I can figure out something to give an invitation for. Little old sprig says, I'm free. You're free to fall. That's all. Free to fall. And so I'm dedicated in the old church downtown on the corner. I'm dedicated to keeping the standards we've kept for almost a quarter of a century. Because I know they'll work if we'll keep that little tree tied to the straight. And keep that cast on that little life. And I'll guarantee you, kids, if you won't rebel, but if you'll obey mom and dad and live within the rules, one of these days, I'll guarantee you. A lot of you kids may not like Brother Hiles now. How do you kids right now are saying, boy, I don't understand that. Did you know, it's not much to give up honking a car in front of a girl's house. You don't get addicted to that. That's not really a big thing to give up. But I want to tell you something, and I'm going to quit. I'm 56 years old. By the time I've been here another 23 years, I'll be 79. One of these days, Brother Hiles' name will be memory. And one of these days, you'll relive these days at the old First Baptist Church. And one of these days, you're going to have a preacher somewhere where you go to church has no standards at all. And you're going to sit one day in your living room rocking in a chair when you're grown. And you're going to say, I wish we had those old days again. I wish we did. And I'll tell you, kids, when you're going to believe that a boy shouldn't come and honk for a girl and she run out and get in the car, I'll tell you when you're going to believe that. First time your daughter gets honked at. And all of a sudden, you're going to say, "Where are you going?" And I hope she does what you do to me. "Fanatic." Oh, then you're going to say, "Brother Hiles was right." God give us some sweet little tender feminine young ladies. Four or five young ladies came to my office one day and they said, "I don't like those Hiles Anderson College boys." Now, some of them I don't like either. What they meant was male chauvinist pig. But it takes a male chauvinist pig to harness an old sow. Boy, that's good, wasn't it? That's preaching, ain't it? Now, I'm not talking about these guys that lock their girlfriends up in a closet and say, "I'll feed you three times a day and come get you when I want." I'm not talking about that. But buddy, if calling your girlfriend and asking her for a date in a proper way and getting to know her parents on a personal basis, and walking to the door and knocking on a door and saying, "Is Betty ready?" Notice that poetry. Betty ready? Huh? They call that being a gentleman. They call that being a gentleman. We need some. And we'd have some if you moms and dads would be as interested in restraining that little branch as it rolls, as much as you're interested in trotting down to the schoolhouse and threatening to kill the teacher who gave your kid a C+ instead of a B-. When you get as concerned about the manners and the character of your child as you do that little piece of ink on a report card, then we're going to have one of these days young people that arise and call us blessed. And I'd rather you not like me now and like me later than to love me now and hate me later. Father, I'm going to quit. I pray you'd help some of this stuff to catch hold tonight. Help our young people to see it. Help our leaders of our church to believe it and practice it. This is nothing new. This is the way America was built.